Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Keep your space feeling comfortable this summer with help from Menards. The Denali Air 6000 BTU window air conditioner has a 3-speed cooling system with remote control, allowing you to control the temperature of your space from anywhere in the room. You call the shots with auto and eco mode to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Stop by in-store or online at Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Pollock. Nick, we're back. We had a one-week hiatus. Well, I had a one-week hiatus. We're back to talk pitching.
What is happening? It's good to see you again, Eric. You look lovely.
Yeah, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder, you know?
It does.
I missed it.
Which is a really weird thing to say right now because, I don't know, it's the same. I'm just kidding. Just messing around. It's good to see you, Eric. And it's that moment of the year. It's June. It's the middle of June. And there's always a slight lull that happens and then it picks right back up. Mm-hmm. And I don't want us to get there. I don't want us to have any sort of lull. I want us to keep on moving. And I got to say, I know I say this like every week. I feel like it's with every single iPhone. Like, we have made the greatest iPhone ever, but I have made the best list ever. It felt so just right. This is how it should be. It didn't feel, oh my gosh, I don't know. This is, I'm at that point in the season where things are finally feeling like they're getting more in place.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way. I guess on the pitching side of it, you know, this is maybe a conversation for another time because it will deviate from the list. But on the pitching side of it, I do feel like there's starting to be some truth in the narrative that like we felt may have happened at the beginning of the year in terms of like some of the guys who were maybe middle roundish or some of the guys we felt like could make leaps have started to do it. A lot of the guys that were like, you know, popular middle round, late round picks have emerged as being consistent forces. A lot of the guys that were inside the top 20 at the start of the year have kind of solidified themselves inside of the top 20 now. It feels like we've survived the early season, like, oh my God, pitching is a mess. Everybody's getting injured. And the landscape generally feels kind of right at this moment. And perhaps going to feel more right as these, you know, big names start coming back in the next few weeks where, you know, we're set to get a lot of pitchers hopefully healthy returning. And that could be an interesting, it could be an interesting and fun summer for starting pitching.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also at the point too where there's too much pitching and not enough hitting. And I've been trying, Eric, I've been trying to deal away my pitching and I just can't. Nobody yeah. wants it.
Me too. I have a home league team with what I think is a pretty stellar rotation. And it seems like nobody, but either everybody wants only the really good people or nobody believes in some of the, you know, who knows? It's difficult out there.
The thing is, I want to deal with the really good people and they won't take them.
Really?
They won't take them.
I want to deal some of the really good people, but people won't take them, as we've talked about, at like cost. Like everybody's like, well, Chris Sale's going to break down in 30 innings. So I'm not going to give you anything good for him. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, then I'll keep riding it out.
Yeah, no one wanted to pay for Imanaga or pay for...
Well, Imanaga is a regression candidate, and obviously he's overrated from the start of the year, and so he's
no one wants to buy in on Jared Jones or Jack Flaherty
Jared Jones
Lopez or Carter Crawford or Tanner Houck. I just wanted something that wasn't like a outfielder who was going to be on the wire in 2 weeks, okay?
Sure.
I was just trying to find something. I've got nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Well... despite our belief in some of these pitchers, I guess others don't. But listen, that's the purpose of this podcast. We can talk about some of these arms and try to help have other people believe.
Believe as and, I point the sign,
make
of course.
And then make trades with you.
Absolutely.
So let's talk up some of the guys that you want to trade.
let's do it.
Our theme for this podcast, you and I were just discussing various vacations that we went on or are going to go on. So the theme for this podcast is types of vacations. Some can be great. Some could even a work trip counts, right? That could be maybe a potentially bad trip here.
Sure.
You've got, you know, different types of maybe you weddings you want to be at, weddings you don't, family weddings you feel you have to attend, things like that. So the landscape is broad here for types of vacations.
Sure. And what would you say the name of the list is this week, Eric?
Well, the name of the list is Freed Still, My Freeding Heart.
There you go. You actually did it with the featured image in mind. I'm so proud of you. You finally actually leaned into what you're supposed to do.
I finally did. I took the task at hand is what happened.
Yeah, Max Fried was a featured one this week because Max Fried is dope and doing dope things. And I mean, I think that's a good transition to tier one.
It is. And let's jump right in. We start with starting pitcher number one, Zach Wheeler. Number two, Tyler Glasnow. Number three, Tarek Skubal. Number four, Chris Sale. Number five, Max Fried. Number six, Corbin Burns. Number seven, Cole Reagans. Number eight, Luis Castillo. Number nine, Shota Imanaga. And number 10, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. What is this tier called? Why is it called that?
This is the all expenses paid resort. I mean, come on. That is just, don't think about anything. Yeah, everything is covered. It's just you're done. You're here. Enjoy it. And everything's fine.
Set it and forget it.
Exactly.
Just go.
That's tier one.
Should we talk about Fried? Because he is the cover boy and the biggest mover within this tier up to number five overall.
I mean, there's not much more to say outside of just the one worry that we had was strikeouts for Max Fried. And what does he do? I don't know. He just has to start with 13 strikeouts. So yeah, he's absolutely bonkers, and he does this every year of starting off slow. Really, since April 23rd is when he actually became the Max Fried that we know and love. And across that span, it's 8 games of a 1.57 ERA with a 0.75 WHIP and a 26% K rate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say all these other things too, but that does enough. He's fantastic.
I have noticed. Because he's on one of my teams, so I was looking into him. I will say that, you know, when we look at like pitch mix changes over time, important to keep in mind it's June 10th. So June itself is a very small sample size. But I've noticed him dialing back on the four seam usage. It was about 33% in March and April, 30% in May, 26% so far in June.
Oh, that's interesting. We have it at 37% for four seamer in that start against Boston.
So this is anything I quote for this will be when I go month over month, I look at Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard. I just like the month over month graphic, the way he presents it.
Sure.
And also, according to Alex's pitch leaderboard, there's been an increase in cutter usage. And that could be, again, matchup dependent so far in June. Yeah, but curveball usage has gone up as well.
Yes, curveball has been about 25% last three starts as opposed to the 20% for the full year. Yeah, and changeup has gone down. Yeah.
And the curveball has been a pretty good swing and miss pitch for him of late. I've liked that change, at least.
Yeah, the changeup in years past has actually been the one that's developed for Max Fried. Mm-hmm. 2022, 2023, those were really major pitches for him. And I would even say more so last year. And then it's kind of taking a step back this year. Not the 20% swing striker, more like the 14%. But yeah, seeing the curveball step up, the crowder step up. I mean, Reed's just really been so good as far as the command goes as well. And that's really the thing that we don't give Fried enough credit for, is just his ability to move all these pitches around. And yeah,
I'm also keeping an eye on the slider. It looks like he's going to the slider more. It looks like it's also adding a little more drop and less horizontal movement. So those are some things that are sticking out to me in terms of like why he has maybe turned the corner since those first three starts. And, you know, again, small sample size in June. So we want to keep that in mind when we're looking at like these percentages. But I'm digging what he's doing. We talked about like wanting to make sure that forearm was healthy and, you know, knock on wood. But it's been a great start to the year for Max Fried. I just want to point out Tyler Glasnow. I don't know if you saw him commenting on Micah Parsons saying he could hit 200 and if he was given a full season of baseball.
No, I did not see this.
Tyler Glasnow just seems like an incredibly likable dude, but was just like, has he ever played baseball before? And they were like, no. And he goes, well, no, then no. he couldn't. It's just like, it's just
200. And by the way, like the league average right now is 232 or so. It's like 232 or 240 as a league average.
Right.
For batting average. Are you kidding? 24% chance to get a hit? Like, you think you're going to...
I think Glasnow said if he had like 560 at-bats, he'd give Micah Parsons five hits on the season. He'd get five.
Yeah,
hits.
That's generous.
And I think that's very generous. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tier two starts with number 11, Joe Ryan, number 12, Aaron Nola, number 13, Paul Skeens, number 14, Garrett Crochet, number 15, Kyle Bradish, number 16, Jared Jones, number 17, Freddie Peralta, number 18, Sonny Gray, and number 19, Logan Webb. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
This one is the weekend getaway. And I mean it like, it's just, hey, I need to hit the reset. I need to just go somewhere. And again, like the all expenses paid one, where it's just take a breather, relax, and it's always there for you. And you know that you're going to be okay to do it like this. That's what I would say for tier two.
I like it. I do love, especially living in the city, do love a weekend away.
Yeah, you need get extremes
out of for a little bit.
Not against anyone who lives in the suburbs or anything like that, but for me, it's always either I'm in the most city of cities or I am in the most big country kind of thing. I need to just get into the woods and get away from this, or I need to be in a city, right?
Yeah,
I gotta love, you just gotta balance.
Fully on board. Or get in the beach and get away with it, or be in the city of cities. I want to ask you about Jared Jones, because you mentioned his name earlier on. I do think some people there is a narrative, at least percolating on Twitter, good old fantasy baseball Twitter, but that, you know, he's not as solid as we've seen at the start. You know, some kinks in the armor are showing. I do find it interesting because it's the way baseball works that, like, he's given up three runs, and I think it was five of his last six starts, and the other start was just a 6 1/3 shutout against the Dodgers. Just
that's all
because,
you know.
But do you have any concerns, not about him, like, oh my God, he's not good, but is he maybe going to settle into like a tier three, tier four type of arm as the year goes on? Or you still think he's like a top 20, top 25 type guy?
Yeah. I'm honestly just kind of confused about how the results have been. How does he get here? It's an 18.5% strikeout rate across his last six games. I think that's really where this is coming from. That includes, that starts on May 10th, two against the Cubs, against the Giants, the Tigers. And then, of course, as you mentioned, this shutout game against the Dodgers and then the Twins. And that just doesn't seem right. 18.5% K rate with a bad ERA, 405 ERA, 141 whip, but it's a 15% swing strike rate, a 37% ICR. When it comes to his two pitches, his four seamer and his slider, those are not bad pitches in this time. So I watch him. I sometimes feel like, oh, that should have worked or should not have worked, or just it just feels wrong. And yeah, I think it's one of those things. Maybe he is tipping. Maybe they found something about it and it's obvious. Maybe it wasn't obvious against the Dodgers. I don't really see a degradation in his skills that much. And I think it's just an odd period, honestly. I can understand why the results are upsetting people. Because on paper, right, that is 4.05 ERA, 1.41 whip. Nick, come on. You got to be aware of this. But it's a sub 70% left on base rate in that time as well. Yeah, I really just don't think that Jared Jones is being bad here. It's just not going his way.
Yeah, I also kind of like, I understand the changeup is not a good like swing and miss pitch for him, but he is going to it more recently and it's not being hit hard of late. Like hitters are not doing damage on that pitch. And I understand that, you know, it's not missing bats lately. I know it flashed a little bit early on, and particularly like in the last start, you know, he got two whiffs on it against the Twins. He got no whiffs in the Dodgers start on the changeup, but I do kind of like for his long-term floor, the idea of like him seeming to be gaining confidence in that as a third pitch, that he is throwing four strikes and he is getting contact on and inducing not always weak contact, but not damaging contact.
Yeah. He threw a lot of them in that last start. Yeah. 20% usage against the Twins.
And the Twins are very platoon heavy, so it was a very left-handed heavy lineup that he faced. And that could also be what part of the reason why like the strikeout upside isn't necessarily there. Is like maybe, you know, we'd have to dig into it more, but against left-handed heavy lineups without the slider, maybe doesn't miss as many bats and whatever.
I don't know if I necessarily love it that much. He did get 4 outs on 5 balls in play. It was about like a 60% strike rate, but 2 whiffs on 17 thrown, low CSW on it, 24%. He did have more ideal contact on his changeup than either his slider or his four seamer. He has 3 of them on the changeup, only 2 on the slider, 2 on the four seamer. It wasn't really well spotted. It was like down the middle a bit or well under the zone for the changeup. And it does appear to me like one of those clear third pitches against the opposite handed batter that you see all the time. Like Glasnow was splitter back in the day, the 11% changeup. It's like, whatever. To me, really, it's about, hey, look, that four seamer just needs to overwhelm. And it hasn't quite as much as we've seen in the past, just about 10 to 11% swing strike rate in those last 6 starts. And I think like that is the main thing for this weird period for Jared Jones. At the same time, the skills of it, the stuff of it, still amazing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really convinced that he isn't someone who is elite. I mean, even in his last one, we did still see, actually, yes, this is interesting. It was a lot less IVB, only 14 IVB, which is weird because we normally see 16, 17 inches of vert. I mean, it was 17 inches against Detroit and just 14 inches against the Twins is strange. But very flat, still came in super hard, 97 miles per hour, 7 feet of extension. That should return more whiffs than 6/38, which is still good, but it's just not like, yo, what up? I'm Jared Jones, right? So I think it will come back. I think there's just a little bit of, hey, cool, you're part of the majors. You go through your adversity, you come out the other side, and you're much better for it.
Yeah. I also just think Aaron Nola isn't getting maybe as much
love. I thought about it. I really did.
For the year he's having. And I understand like the strikeouts aren't there. And maybe that's why we're not talking about it globally. Like, hey, Aaron Nola's having a good year. But hey, Aaron Nola's having a pretty good year. Like it's unfortunate that he no longer seems to be like a 29-30% strikeout guy. It'd be great if we could even just get him to be a 25% strikeout rate guy. But like, you're really not mad at anything else that's happening right now.
I mean, I should mention he has 76 strikeouts this year, which is 86th percentile. So it's not like he's not giving you strikeouts because he's going.
Yes, that's true. He is giving you length, which means he's giving you strikeouts in, you know, aggregate, which is what you want.
Right. It's over 6 strikeouts per start so far, or it's about actually right there. But the thing is, last 4 have been 5-5-6-5 as far as strikeouts go. The curveball has looked better as of late. He is actually doing higher four seamers, which is just, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. He's doing the thing. 53% high lock this year after about 45% the previous 2 years. He's embracing that. It's a lot of fun, but it has a low put away rate. He's trying to throw it elevated with two strikes and it's just a 17% put away rate. So that might come together as well, but the curveball is looking phenomenal. It's back to its, pretty much back to its old self that we want to see. High strike rates, all of that good stuff. So low ICR, like very low ICR for Aaron Nola's curveball. I think because he hasn't really been a guy I expect to go 8 to 10 strikeouts constantly. Mm-hmm. He's not really in that top tier. I know I gave it to Max Fried, but then Max Fried was just like going 7 to 9 innings a game. And it's just when you do that with his ratios, it's just, I had to elevate him and then eventually came. So that's all good. Aaron Nola is doing the thing. It's really nice. We also know that it could disappear in a heartbeat.
Sure.
And there's always that feeling with Nola. But yeah, so far so good.
So far so good for a lot of these guys in tier three as well. Starts with number 20, Grayson Rodriguez. Number 21, Tanner Houck. Number 22, George Kirby. Number 23, Mackenzie Gore. Number 24, Logan Gilbert. Number 25, Luis Gil. Number 26, Kevin Gausman. Number 27, Jack Flaherty. Number 28, Ranger Suarez. Number 29, Dylan Cease. Number 30, Ryan Pepiot. And number 31, Pablo Lopez. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
We got a pretty good name for this one. I'm going to tell you it after this break.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at NetCredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
So Eric just gave me the Jay Leno hair flip as he knew that I was going to take us to the break, and he knew I was going to say the words after this break, and he said it like I was Jay Leno. I could see it. That's what you were doing.
It wasn't intentional. I saw it. I see it now that you said it, and it makes me feel worse about having done it.
I think you look good. I think it was good. I've always wanted to look like Jay Leno. No, this is tier three. And these are the guys who are not aces yet, right? They're around the corner. So this is the vacation that is 2 weeks away, and it's all you can think about. Like whether it's summer break, as a kid, or maybe it's even like Thanksgiving break, just like, oh my God, after this assembly,
just give me a little bit of break.
Get me there. You know, you just can't wait. Oh man, you're going to that place. It's got the water slide. Oh my God. You know, whatever it is, that's what this tier is, because you're not quite there yet, but it's around the corner and you can't wait.
Love that. I got to tell you the name that surprises me the most in this tier.
Oh man, hold on, hold on.
Who do you think it is?
Pablo Lopez.
It's not, because I understand the struggles that Pablo Lopez is having right now. We've talked about them. It's Kevin Gausman.
What, you think he's an ace still?
No. Okay. And I think that it's just, it's more surprising that I see his name in here and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Oh, like, so it's not surprising, actually, my ranking. It's just like...
No. It's surprising. Like, it is surprising to see Kevin Gausman's name amidst Jack Flaherty, Ranger Suarez, and Luis Gil, but not think with Pablo Lopez, I don't think this is going to last. Like, I think I trust... And that's not saying I don't trust Kevin Gausman, but I am more inclined to believe in a bounce back based on the way Pablo Lopez is pitching right now, because I just see things that I think they can be better. I understand it. It seems to me more like precision of a couple of pitches and not like a whole, you know, larger issue.
Right.
Kevin Gausman has been, I mean, the strikeouts are gone. The velocity is gone-ish.
I would not say that they're completely gone from Gausman. I mean, no. It's like, his last three games have been what, double digits?
Well, but I mean, if you're looking at the whole, like if I'm looking at the profile of him as a season to date, it is not the swing and miss. It's not the strikeouts that I'm used to.
Sure.
As a whole, the velocity is down. I know there have been peaks and there have been some valleys. The whip is right in line with what it's been in the past, which is not an ideal 1.25. Mm-hmm. Way more hard contact allowed, like the highest barrel rate allowed of his career. And so I don't know. Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel for Gausman in the way you might see one for Pablo Lopez?
So first and foremost, I just want to say one day we can give Peaks the freedom of being its own independent noun.
They don't have
without
to doubt.
Always having to be tied down by valleys. Well,
you know, Twin Peaks tried to do that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's just when you say we see the peaks, and I know what you're going to say. You're going to say the valleys. Let it live. Let it be its own man.
We see the peaks and the not as tall peaks. The shorter peaks.
You see the peaks. The hills. Doubles. Okay. Look, with Kevin Gausman, the splitter is honestly the problem. It's not even the fastball. And you want to think it's the fastball because that's the one that gets crushed. 52% ICR on that, which is so bad. But then you realize, it was a 46% in 2022 and a 48% in 2023. It's pretty much the same strike rate, kind of the same location. It's actually a slightly higher called strike rate. It's 34% CSW. And like, wait, this isn't actually that much different. Sure, it's 94 as opposed to almost hinting 95. But no, this is kind of the same pitch. Then you go to the splitter and go, oh, right. They just aren't missing the splitter. 18%. Swing strike rate on it, and you realize, oh, okay, so batters are just more capable against the splitter, which means they are attacking the fastball more, and that makes a whole lot of sense. It's just a 22% CSW for the splitter this year, and really just with Kevin Gausman, it's kind of the thing that we expected. I don't know, he didn't change much. It's just the splitter's a little bit worse right now. It probably will be a little bit better as the season goes on. He's not someone I trust against good teams. And being a ace is going to ace means I don't care your opponent. I'm starting you. At the very least in the probable start tier, but I'm still starting you. And I can't do that anymore with Kevin Gausman. So he's in that ace potential tier. Can he get back there? Sure. If that splitter does become that ridiculous pitch again, as it has been in the past, yes. But Nick, he has this 320 BABIP, but 9 hit per 9. Like, is that going to change? Well, hopefully, but he's probably going to be around the 8 to 9 hit per 9 because that's just kind of who he is with his fastball and his splitter, and guys are pretty much guessing against him, and that's that. It has been this way for 3 straight years.
Mm-hmm.
That said, he still has a low walk rate, so that means the whip is not going to be as bad as it can be. You can get to like 115 or 118 or whatever it is for the rest of the year, fine. And it should come with like a 320 ERA. It should come with a strikeout to, you know, strikeout and change per inning. So I hope he gets back there, but the splitter is still inconsistent. Then that's going to be an issue. He had 10 strikeout games in his last four, one against Detroit, one against the Orioles. And then he had Baltimore for 600 runs. So it's, you know, you just kind of throw him in there against all but the toughest teams and you should be fine with Kevin Gausman.
I'd be curious. I don't know if you can answer this now. It might require Eno, which might require a question on the craft, but I noticed that the Stuff Plus on the splitter has gone down in three straight years and is now just 95 Stuff Plus this year, dropped from 105 last year. But PLV actually has the splitter up from 508 last year to 545 this year.
Probably guess so.
Because if I look at it.
I mean, what's the difference between PLV and Stuff Plus?
That's a very good question that I was kind of hoping to have you.
We include location.
Locations is, yes. I mean, look, yes, location and yours. I didn't know that Stuff Plus, because Location Plus is different. I was going to say, I didn't know it didn't account for that at all. But
yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And by the way, I want to apologize. I misspoke about Stuff Plus. You know, made this clear on the craft. I said that Stuff Plus uses VAA, doesn't use HVAA. But that's wrong because it includes all the components of HVAA inside of Stuff Plus. So thus, it does really actually do that. So I want to make sure that is clear. I got that wrong. I felt so bad. When I talked to Eno on the craft last week, he called me out on it. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like mortified. I hate the idea of any way like saying something, not necessarily negative, but just, you know, saying like, well, this thing is this thing. This is my ours is this thing. Like, no. I was wrong completely. Stuff Plus does include that kind of stuff. So when it comes to attack angle, Stuff Plus does include that as well. So like it even more than you do now.
Yeah. And I think everybody knows if you misspoke, it was totally in earnest. You know, nobody's trying to. You know,
oh, no, of course. But I still don't ever want to spread that
kind
of misinformation in any way about it. So, but anyway, so yeah, so that's the major difference. I think that we just really like how Gausman's locating it. But maybe there is something to be said about how he's using it. And it's also been a higher hit luck plus six. Supposed to the minus three we got last year. I mean, that's 9 hits allowed on that splitter. That does change things a little bit. But yeah, it's very strange. It's also kind of weird. This is all weird stuff here. Hit luck essentially says every single splitter thrown, essentially just, hey, how many hits do we expect this to be? Which is kind of wild because it does center at zero or like one or minus one, which is pretty negligible for an entire season. And to see a higher BABIP on his splitter last year, but a minus three hit luck, that means he allowed three fewer hits than he should have, suggests that it should have been a higher BABIP last year on Gausman's splitter. But then plus six this year, while a 292 BABIP. Now, keep in mind, that's only BABIP, as opposed to like if you got a strikeout or something along those lines, where we thought you might have gotten a hit or so, that also is where hit luck will intervene. But it is pretty interesting to say like, hey, you should have six more hits. And then we're going to say, no, he's getting fortunate on the BABIP or something like that. Like, no, he's actually kind of getting unlucky in some ways, which is kind of interesting to see.
A weird mix. Yeah. And while we're on the topic, we should just note Tanner Houck up here at 21, not necessarily because of the cutter that everybody was like, oh, if he uses a cutter against lefties.
That was me. Hi, I'm that guy.
Splitter. Well, it was a lot of us, to be fair, because I don't think we expected that he was going to, even though the slider is a really good pitch, we thought that he might need the cutter as well against lefties, but he's gone sinker slider to righties and slider splitter to lefties. And it has certainly been enough this year because the splitter has worked against lefties.
It's
been a really good pitch. And the slider has performed really well against lefties. Like,
It's been a different splitter. It has increased its break down dramatically. We're talking 4 inches extra IVB. That is drop. With the same horizontal break, it's just been far, far better. Its VAA is better. That means essentially it's more of a steep pitch on average, which is just great. And it's, 546 PLV. It is absolutely killing it against lefties this season. That's really the difference maker to me. 53% strikes on the splitter for Tanner Houck in 2023. 67% this year. That is so huge. This is why we thought he needed a cutter, because we didn't think the splitter would be reliable enough. He threw 18% last year against lefties, 36% of the time this year against lefties. Locations are great as well against them. Yeah, that's the difference for Tanner Houck. And the big question then is, can he keep that up, right? I mean, I say all the time, splitters are the weird one.
Yeah.
But I want to think so. He's also getting a slider for strikes against lefties. My gosh, 60% zone rate as opposed to 37% against lefties. It does get hit a little bit harder, but I think because of the splitter being there as well, it's just nullifying the two. So yeah, Houck is looking great. He has one test left. It's like a lot of these guys. They have, what is the rule of an ace? You got to be able to defeat a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
So Houck is going to get the Phillies. We have Grayson Rodriguez going against also the Phillies. I don't know. There's some good offenses these guys are facing this week, and they got to take them down. Same with George Kirby, same with Logan Gilbert, same with, Jack Flaherty has Astros and Rangers, but they're on the cusp. I hope they can all get there.
Yeah. Looks like also slightly different sliders from Houck to righties and lefties. The slider to lefty is a little bit slower. You guys have it with only 5.8 extension to lefties, but 6 extension to righties. And there's vertical movement to lefties. The VAA, the height adjusted VAA, is different. It's not major. It's not like he's throwing two massively different pitches, but it does look like he is. It's enough that makes me feel like he is tweaking the slider a little bit versus righties or lefties, where maybe the one to lefties has less horizontal sweep and a little more vertical movement, and maybe that's helping him keep it in the strike zone. Whereas the pitch to righties is obviously he's trying to get it out of the strike zone for swings and misses because of how he releases it and where it comes across.
My guess there is location is affecting it. So
yeah,
did this great thing about pitch location affects movement, and it makes sense, right? As we're pitching, Hunter Brown called it the extension side, right? Glove side is your extension side. Mm-hmm. So you're going longer in it. And he throws exclusively, or tries to, glove side against righties, and then he does both sides for lefties. So if you're coming off, instead of extending all the way through, where you're then going to get more horizontal on it, if you come off early and go out and down, that means you're going to get more vertical break.
Right.
Does not surprise me there. But yeah, does. The emphasis is different, and that's a good point.
Which I think is just an interesting thing to look at. Like, you can approach righties and lefties differently without having to have massively different pitch mixes. You could change your intention on a pitch, which could slightly change the movement on the pitch or the shape of the pitch, because you're trying to do different things with it, even though it's not an inherently different pitch in and of itself. And that's something to really think about as we look at these guys without deep arsenals, and we say, okay, how can they manage their issues with splits? That sometimes the answer isn't a new pitch. I mean, sometimes it definitely is, but sometimes it's just a new approach with that pitch, which can lead to some more success.
Absolutely.
Let's dive into a big tier now, which is tier 4. Starts at number 32, Justin Steele. Number 33, Framber Valdez. Number 34, Carlos Rodon. Number 35, Nick Pivetta. Number 36, Nathan Eovaldi. Number 37, Bailey Ober. Number 38, Brian Wu. Number 39, Michael King. Number 40, Ronel Blanco. Number 41, Zach Eflin. Number 42, Seth Lugo. Number 43, Ronaldo Lopez. Number 44, Christopher Sanchez. And number 45, Gavin Stone. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
It's a staycation where you get a hotel in the city that you live in. Have you done this?
Not a full hotel. No, we've done like little staycations, but no, except on our wedding night where we got a hotel in the city that we live in. Otherwise, no.
Of course. Yeah, it's really nice because it feels safe and secure. You know the area and everything like that, but you also feel like you're getting that extra bit of freedom and excitement like a tier four Holly would give you with strikeouts.
I like it. Do love a staycation too. Gotta get one of those on the books one of these days. These are all pretty interesting names. You know, there's a couple big, you know, guys leaping up here. I don't know in terms of the movement. Brian Wu up 13 spots, Christopher Sanchez 10 spots, Gavin Stone 13 spots. Are any of those guys because of like a new level of confidence, or was it just kind of how it shook with some people rising and falling, et cetera?
Obviously they are getting a bigger jump than others. With Brian Wu, it's the fact that, again, the injury thing is kind of behind him. And as you get a little bit more clarity, I mean, it's four straight starts of six innings with only one game allowing an earned run. That was three against the Nationals. I still have some worry with Wu when it comes to his secondaries. We really haven't seen them come together yet. It's been four-seamer sinker a ton still, and it's about 20% everything else. So I want to believe that the slider can be a bigger deal, or the cutter, or sweeper, whatever it is. It's just not, I wouldn't say the cutter really, it's the slider is the cutter, it's fine. Yeah, I want to see those come together, but the four-seamer is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good foundation that I feel pretty confident in Brian Wu at the moment. So he gets that bump up because, again, I had him lower, thinking that the forearm is still really an issue. It doesn't really look like it is as much at the moment. The other guys, I mean, Eovaldi's looking great, and he's looking healthier, and everything's fine. Carlos Rodon deserves more love for just his consistency and what he's doing with his fastball and slider. Also has a changeup in the mix now too. And then 44 and 45, it's always hard, tier four and tier six, because they're both the sturdy types. They're not really the volatile ones, and I can never really decide, are they the boring ones? Are they ones that we think there might be something more to them? And Christopher Sanchez is throwing harder now. He threw like 96 and 95 in like the last two starts. Like, what? And Gavin Stone honestly went through a test of his own against the Yankees. He survived it. He came through. I feel like he needed to be more rewarded. So I pushed him into tier four.
Do you think the last two starts are a sign of concern for Ronel Blanco, or just a blip that most starting pitchers go through, but because we didn't even think about him before this year, we're starting to think maybe it's, you know, the end of Cinderella's story?
Sure. Right. I think the main issue here is I need to take small steps down. If I am going to do things right, I never really do anything in major swoops. I try not to, at least. And I have noticed that the changeup has been a little bit weird. Not as consistent and dependable as the slider has been. And I think it's forced the four-seamer to try and do more than it should, because that generally is the pitch that gets hit. So I'm a little concerned about that, but I think over time, like, that changeup and slider has been the changeup has been such a dependable pitch for him. It should come back. But I am noting that maybe the feel is going away a little bit for Blanco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense to me as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to move into tier number five, which starts with, it's a lot of red in this tier, but it starts with number 46, Yusei Kikuchi, number 47, Jesus Luzardo, number 48, Walker Buehler, number 49, Bryce Miller, number 50, Cutter Crawford, number 51, Tanner Bibee, number 52, Hunter Green, number 53, Nestor Cortez. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
So I want you to understand here, it's minus three pretty much across the board, because you have Zach Eflin returning, and then you had Stone and Sanchez leapfrogging.
Okay.
So you have that. You also have Kikuchi at the top of it.
Right. You don't hate this minus tier.
It's a minus four, and then you throw in Justin Verlander and it's minus five because of Brian Wu, and then it's Verlander and Olsen going underneath to tier six. So then it's minus three. The only one that really moved were Kikuchi, who, of course, we were scared about with the slider getting worse, and then the slider velocity came back. It was at 86, and it came back to 88. And he survived against the Orioles and had like a golden goal of a night. So hopefully him colliding into the Oakland Athletics player is not going to affect
shoulder checking somebody. Yeah. You didn't even answer my question, though. What's this tier called? Why is it called?
Oh, that? Right. Of course. I'm the one who's messing this one up. My gosh, what is this world? This is the going to the airport and not knowing where you're going to be flying to. vacation because you know it's going to be exciting. Mm. You just want to get away, but you're just deciding roulette as you enter the airport. And it's a cherry bomb tier, of course. So with Kikuchi, we're feeling better after that start against the Orioles. And then Jesus Luzardo, honestly, I should have done before. I regret not bringing down Luzardo before the blow up because, yeah, he is a cherry bomb. I always knew he was a cherry bomb. We know this. And I acted like he wasn't. Should have been here a long time ago. So yeah, he's in this cherry bomb tier with the rest of them.
Cherry bombs. And your worries on Cutter Crawford came to fruition. Not in the sense of like we're worried about him overall as a fantasy asset, but the idea that like what he was showing early on in the year, I think it's not crazy to say, but he was showing early on in the year was not sustainable. But the idea that he is a good pitcher with a deep arsenal of pitches and nothing that is necessarily elite. And so there will be some rough starts against really good offenses. And he's had some really good offenses to face and will continue this week to face some really good offenses.
The Phillies and the Yankees. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
It's tough.
Not fun.
It's tough for him.
Yes.
But you're still, you're not like actively trying to get rid of him. We believe overall.
I think that Cutter Crawford has three really solid pitches, his four seamer, sweeper, and cutter. Really, the thing is that the polish isn't quite there. And he doesn't have that leader still. He doesn't have that one that says, like, cool, when things are not going well, this is the one that gets me out of it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. We're going to get to tier number six, but we're going to do that after this break.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait, you look and sound just like me.
I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money?
A lot less.
I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV, starting at just $40 a month. Everything great about me, but for less money? Which makes me greater, don't you think? Get the news you love and more for less. Start saving today. Visit sling.com to see your offer.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Nick tried the Jay Leno. It didn't quite work.
I can't do it. So well. Eric's got it. Okay. I did it like Conan O'Brien.
I got a little bit of hair that can flop around. Yeah, you're a little lankier, so your movements, they seem more exaggerated. Who knows? Tier number six starts at number 54, Justin Verlander. Number 55, Reese Olson. Number 56, Marcus Stroman. Number 57, Jose Berrios. Number 58, Chris Bassett. And number 59, Brian Bayo. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This is the sick day. Actually, no, I take that back. It is the holiday, is what I meant to say. It is the one that you get. It's free. It's stable. It's not the one that you get like jazzed about, but it's a vacation. It's a federal holiday.
Okay. It is a federal holiday. You had some early concerns about Justin Verlander, but are there some new concerns about Reese Olson?
With Reese Olson, it's just been two bad starts, and I hope that the four-seamer doesn't have to be used as much as he has recently, because it's just a bad pitch, and it got destroyed again. And it's just been two bad starts of it. And I also felt that Reese Olson wasn't really performing at the level of Tier 4. Mm-hmm. I see like Justin Steele and Carlos Rodon and Framber Valdez just doing a nine-inning, you know, absurdity, and Nick Pivetta and all this stuff, and I just feel like Reese Olson isn't quite that. He's closer to Stroman and Brios and Bassett. So I felt that he was just in the wrong tier. And then that last game kind of confirmed that. So I just moved him down to tier 6.
We're not necessarily getting the leap we thought we were going to get from Brian Bale.
No. Well, I mean, recently it's kind of interesting. He's just got the new skill, but the old skill is not catching up yet, which is the changeup. The changeup's just been bad the past couple starts. The slider actually is the development that we want it to be. It's there. Right here. It's just the
13.5% swing and strike rate on the year so far. Yeah. Well, what has happened to these guys like Bayo and Pablo Lopez?
Yeah. The last three just to four starts have been weird for Bayo because the slider's actually really become the thing we want it to be. It's just he's got the changeup, which is the classic thing for Bayo. Same as you mentioned, Pablo Lopez. They'll both, I feel, get those signature changes back.
Yes. You'd have to hope that pitchers like this who have that pitch they can rely on will be able to recapture that pitch that they can rely on.
Right.
But, you know, fingers crossed for that. Tier number 7 starts with number 60, Mitch Keller. Number 61, Nick Lodolo. Number 62, Jake Irvin. Number 63, Matt Waldron. Number 64, Taj Bradley. Number 65, Hunter Brown. Number 66, Jordan Hicks. Number 67, Andrew Heaney. And number 68, John Gray. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
So this is the cross-country road trip. And it's like one of those where like at a concept, it can feel like, oh yeah, road trip. But then, you know, there can be so many things that go wrong with us. Just, oh my gosh, just stuck in the middle of nowhere. You hate each other. You can't go back. The whole thing, it's a long time. Oh man, you don't know if this is going to end well.
I love that. My wife has a story. They did a cross-country road trip in an RV when she was in high school. And they always tell that, like, she had this makeup bag that, like, she always just had loose in the RV, and every time they went over bumps or turn, the makeup bag would like fly around the RV. And so it became this thing that, like, in the middle of the trip, everybody's just like, "It's that damn makeup bag." Like, it just became the thing that they got that got under everybody's skin the whole time. God. So whenever I think of just like anything can go wrong, sometimes it's just little things like a piece of luggage just flying all over the place. What can go right, though, is the last few weeks for a few of these guys on here. I mean,
yes,
you're looking at we'll talk about Mitch Keller later, but Mitch Keller has been on a really good run.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Irvin has pretty much had a really great season and is maybe not getting talked about enough. We've talked at length about the last maybe 6 or 7 starts for Matt Waldron and Hunter Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any of those guys that you are inclined to believe there might be something here? Like, we could see them in tier 6 at some point?
As a consistent one, maybe Irvin, but not really. Look, with Mitch Keller, we see it every year. The command shows up for like a month or 6 weeks. We saw it last year and goes away. Like, this is what he does. When his command is there, it's great, but it's not going to be there for forever, and I'm happy that it's here now. I don't know what to do with Nick Lodolo at all. So because like the curveball isn't dominating consistently, his four seamer is fine. It's not really this just overwhelming one, but you still kind of want to start Nick Lodolo. So, okay. Jake Irvin is having this ridiculous run, as we've talked about. Curveball has been better too. I didn't give enough credit last week, and here he is just continuing to do it. So props to him. And Hunter Brown, I think that a lot of people are getting really amped about all of a sudden. And I'm just thinking, he's okay. He had like one really good start with finally putting everything in the right place. And the other two have been, oh, good. This worked out. Whew. it's not, I'm not sold in about Hunter Brown at the moment. And Matt Waldrum had three really good starts with Knuckleball. Then it was horrible and he got through it. And then it was much better with a near 70% striker in the last game. So I want to believe that was just a one start blip as opposed to just always being back and forth. But yeah, all these guys are going to be rostered, I imagine, in your leagues. I find myself not as enthused about Taj Bradley as others. I really just don't think you want to put yourself in harm's way, even though it can be very tempting. His command is just terrible. And I hate trusting or rostering guys where I just do not trust their command on a given night. Mm-hmm. So that's a really rough one for me.
Yeah. Everybody's been focusing on the sinker for Hunter Brown. And I understand that. I mean, moving away from the four-seam fastball has been really good for him, whether that's increased use of the sinker or the cutter. I did note, I wrote about him last week in my Mixing It Up column on NBC Sports, which comes out on Wednesday. This week will be just all of the prospect debuts, the Waldrips and the Thorpes and the Povich's and whatever. But I noted that it seems like Hunter Brown has been tweaking his curveball a little bit. In April, the curveball was 81.4 miles an hour. His last start, the curveball was 83.8 miles an hour. That's almost 2.5 miles an hour more, harder. It also has more horizontal movement and less vertical movement. The curveball had a 5.3% swinging strike rate in April and a 17.8% swinging strike rate in May. Now, again, could be locations, could be confidence in the pitch, but that's another change that like we're not really discussing within there is like a 2.5 mile an hour change in velocity on an off-speed pitch is likely not just like, hey, I'm throwing it a little different. Like, you know, it seems to be a conscious decision. And that added velocity has maybe added to the sweep on the pitch or that, you know, the horizontal movement of it. And then you also just can't ignore that it is missing more bats constantly than when he was throwing it at the start of the year. And so it'd be interesting to find out if those are conscious, like if he's trying to change the shape, if he was just trying to throw it harder, what's going on there. But something is going on there, and it's been good for him of late.
Yeah. It's weird because Saturday with Hunter Brown, we only saw 9 curveballs as opposed to the 23 in the previous game. Yeah. And it was 83.7, as you were talking about, on that Sunday, the second game. But Hunter Brown's curveball on the 8th of June was just 81.7. It wasn't really a major factor. The real thing I saw there was the sinker was bad. 33% strike rate, 5 for 15 strikes.
He has not been locating that pitch in the zone at all.
And the savior of that game,
his strike zone plot is just against righties on the sinker. It looks like he's hitting everybody in the head.
Right. And his cutter was a savior. Why? Because he threw it nearly 30% of the time as opposed to like the 15% he had for the year. And by the way, everybody listening, just go to the game logs. You'll see that he threw 29% usage with an up of 14.5%. And that's relative to every other game in that season up to that moment. So you can quickly see like, oh man, threw more cutters in this one. That's great. And it was 9 for 9 in play getting outs. 9 for 9. He had a total of 13 balls in play. 9 of them were cutters, all for outs. I mean, that's how he survived against the Angels, right? It's nothing else to me that was so exceptional. But sure, he had some four-seamer whiffs in there. Great. 2 were in play. 2 were hits, right? And that's how I'm seeing this with Hunter Brown is it feels like every start, there's just something new that is, oh, cool. This is what made it work this time for me. Because if you look at the strike zone plot, it looks like Fruity Pebbles where all of them are scattered outside of your bowl, except for the cutters in the top of the zone in that start. And then against the Twins, he actually, I think the only time I've seen him legitimately do a Blake Snell blueprint. Like, it was four seamers and sinkers actually upstairs. Then he had splitters and curveballs and cutters down properly for the first time in ages. So I don't feel like I trust Hunter Brown at all to just execute something and have like, this is my game plan. And anytime I've ever seen, and so I had four walks, by the way, Hunter Brown against the Angels. It's anytime I've seen a guy say, hey, I have all of these options on a given night, whatever is going to be successful. Maybe it's this thing, maybe it's that thing. Doesn't matter. I've got so many things. I just have so many ways to make it work. No, that means that they often don't have anything. And they're lucky that one thing works.
And the thing we've seen
traditionally
with, and the thing we've seen with Hunter Brown in the past is that he could have something that works and then he could change how he pitches a month later. Right. That like settling on who he is as a pitcher has been an issue. And that's where I'm like, okay, he's pitching better of late for sure. No argument about it. Are some of these changes intriguing? Yes. Am I here declaring he's back? No, because two starts from now, he could be doing something totally different. I just don't know that I trust that he will, that what he's doing is something that he's going to continue doing consistently and that he can continue having success with consistently. I have no problem if you want to, you know, if you have a really good rotation of guys that you're like, I feel locked in with these five or six arms. Hunter Brown's on my waiver wire. I'm going to pick him up and see, you know, I can have the luxury of being able to, you know, play matchups or put him on my bench over the next couple of weeks and see how this goes. But I'm not here to tell you that this is like, hey, Hunter Brown's a top 30 or 40 starter again, and he's back. I just don't, yeah. I'm not at that confidence level.
It is interesting that he has a 42% ICR across his last 10 games. But pretty much after that 9-earned run game against the Royals, I was just kind of curious, what is it if you said, no, I don't care, I'm going to keep going with this. 4.02 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, 27% K rate since then, 10% walk rate. But about an 80% left on base rate, 250 BABIP, and 32% ICR, 24% home run fly ball rate, to be fair. I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get. Also, these opponents, my gosh. Nationals, Mariners, Tigers, Angels, Mariners, Twins, Angels. You know, it's only really Atlanta, Cleveland, and Milwaukee. And by the way, those were his bad starts for the most part.
Right.
So there's something to be said about that, too.
Yeah. There's something to be said about the guys in this next year, too. Starts at number 69. Tyler Anderson, number 70, Jose Soriano, number 71, Javier Assad, number 72, Kyle Gibson, number 73, Patrick Sandoval, number 74, Mitchell Parker, number 75, Eric Fetty, and number 76, Brandon Pfaadt. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Well, this is actually a pretty, it's an interesting one. I'm curious what you think about it. I'll tell you after this break.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s. 1975, to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Eric, this one is going to grandparents, or it could be the in-laws or something like that. It is technically a vacation.
Sure.
Right? Is it exciting? No. Is it, it depends, of course, on the family. But for the most part, it's not the, oh my gosh, I cannot wait to get going in here, get there. But yes, technically, this is a vacation. And it's a Toby tier. Tier 8.
Yeah. Mitchell Parker's in here. Great schedule this week for the Nationals. But I do think Amazing. The Nationals were just, there's some starting pitchers that need a little love in that rotation. We talked about Jake Irvin. Mackenzie Gore it's taken
Patrick
him forever.
Corbin.
I'm going to stop you there. listen, there are some guys that maybe are not getting the appreciation they deserve.
Right. I mean, Mitchell Parker, what's so interesting about him is he showed up with two pitches and now he's defining himself more as that four pitch guy.
Yeah, he has like four.
Right. Slider has showed up against Atlanta twice, which is so funny to me. And with two wonderful starts, I believe it's Detroit and the Marlins. Is that right? I don't remember who the second one is, but it's another good one. And yeah, you should feel kind of all right with Parker, especially he has four pitches going on a given night.
Yeah. I saw we're nearing silly season with the trade deadline coming. And so you're getting a lot of like these trade rumors.
Oh no.
That are real or not real, but I did see that like the Guardians could have some interest in acquiring Jose Soriano as just like a guy to round out their rotation. And I was like, oh, a guy with interesting secondaries and a terrible four seam fastball. I'd love him to go to the Guardians.
He does have a good sinker though.
He does.
It is a good sinker. It's a foundation for him. If he throws enough strikes with that sinker, then great. The curveball can do everything that it wants to do. So, I mean, that's why he's a Toby. I've really struggled of where to put Jose Soriano because he goes 400 runs or he goes 0 or 1 runs on a given night. But I feel like he's one of those like, all right, you don't really want to drop him because everything else is blech. So fine. You're a Toby now. Number 70, Jose Soriano.
Yeah. You're a Toby that I'm interested in, that I'd like. We got to talk about some guys in this next year. So we're going to jump right in. Number 77, JP Sears. Number 78, Spencer Arrighetti. Number 79, Drew Thorpe. Number 80, Hurston Waldrop. Number 81, Tyler McGill. Number 82, Ben Brown. Number 83, Hogan Harris. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This is finding yourself in another country. Okay, this is a journey where you don't know where you're going to get.
Spiritually, or like you wake up and you're like, how did I get here?
No, that is not a vacation. That is that is like, I remember going to a party once and there were people younger than me. And they just went, you know, I just feel like you got to go spend 3 months. Everybody should spend 3 months trying to find themselves in Africa. I go, what? What are you? What world? What world is this? How? Like, you think I can just stop everything and do that? Have all the money to go, just go find myself? And what? I'm happy for those who have been able to do that and done what they need to do for their personal inventory to reset and all of that. Absolutely. But the idea that every single person should do it and why haven't they done this? Unreal. So anyway, this is that trip. Because you don't know. Maybe it's just going to be like, my gosh, I can't believe I spent all that money and all that time. And I don't, you know, I need to look inward for purpose as opposed to outward. But maybe it's just like, no, I found the thing there. I understand myself so much better. I understand what I've been searching for and everything. And that could be it. So that's maybe with all the Vegas rules and actually all the Spice Girls, the people who could be something and you're curious about chasing some random dudes.
Yeah, and maybe all the things you found were terrible and you wish you hadn't found them out. Let's talk about the Hurston Waldrop debut. What were your thoughts?
Well, if you know me from the preseason, I was not a fan of Hurston Waldrop because I saw violent mechanics and I saw also splitter. Plus a fastball that was not as overpowering as I wanted it to be as far as the lovely pitch shape characteristics that we know about. And by the way, I do want to announce to everybody, if you didn't see us on Twitter or inside of our Discord today, we actually just launched for PL Pro users our minor league pitch type cards for PLV and advanced pitch shapes.
I saw Kyle tweet that out.
And everything for AAA minor leaguers. Amazing. And we compare also PLV to major leaguers. So it's not just like how they're doing relative to other minor leaguers. It's actually how they would in the majors. It's so good. And I highly recommend everybody just go look up your favorite AAA starter to see if like we actually like it and how it moves and all of that stuff. David Festa, amazing extension on that four seam. And let me tell you, good IVB.
Love you from David Festa.
I do. It's just not that flat, but whatever. Anyway, Hurston Waldrep, I saw three innings. I was like, oh man, I guess it's looking all right. Like you look at the four seamer and you think, oh, that looks kind of cool. Comes in, boom, bam, you know, 96. All right. But it also has a little bit of a dip to it. I'm like, oh, that's not really a good shape to it. Probably a little bit more hittable than we want it to be. The slider is fine. And the splitter, yes, splitter did get some whiffs. But three innings went by. I was like, huh, this is actually going okay. I guess maybe it might have been a little too harsh. And then, oh, no, there it comes. All right, four walks and one strike out at the end of it. And three-run shot involved. And just, okay. This is why you don't do MLB debuts, guys. But the Nationals doesn't matter. Don't do them. Don't do them. Didn't work well for Skeens. Don't do it.
It didn't. I hear you on everything about the Arsenal. Yeah, the start of the show, I couldn't hear you. I didn't know what was happening with the microphones. So yeah. I couldn't hear you.
That's weird.
First of all, the splitter is like otherworldly good.
Yeah, it's an above average splitter that I don't think is going to really abandon Waldrep.
Right. The slider has gotten better this year. To be a more legitimate third pitch. I don't believe you're getting like, you know, this elite frontline rookie. You're not getting a Skeens, Jared Jones type of pitcher. I do think he was better than the stat line indicates from the debut.
Oh, I do agree with that one.
I watched that start. I thought the fourth inning was some stuff you tend to see from rookies and some really poor luck. The Lane Thomas single that started off the inning, Abrams flight out to start off the inning. The Lane Thomas single, well struck. There was a walk to Jesse Winker that was like, it was a very competitive at bat. Like it was a 3-2 count. I really thought that there was the 2-2 pitch was a fastball up in the zone. I thought could have easily been a strike. I think it may have been a strike. Winker laid off a good 3-2 slider, splitter. Like, say what you want about Jesse Winker. We've known that he commands the strike zone pretty well, has a good understanding of the strike zone. It was a good veteran at bat. He drew the walk. And then he just
terrible at bat, by the way, the first inning. Oh my gosh, it drove me insane.
And he missed location on the fastball to Keibert Ruiz. It was supposed to be outside.
Yep.
He missed inside. We understand that command and location are not, you know, perfect for Waldrep. And Ruiz turned on it. And it's like, okay, that there weren't a lot of mistakes to start that inning, but one of them led to three runs right off the bat.
Yeah.
And then there was the next at bat to Senzel. I do think he was not, I mean, it was not competitive for whatever reason after the home run, you know. Then there was the bloop to Luis Garcia, the Joey Gallo, like slow roller to third that because the Braves were shifting an infield hit. And then they brought in a reliever who let up a bases clearing double. Like, I'm not excusing the performance, but I think that could have very easily been a start where he winds up going five innings and allows three runs. And now you're like, okay, it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah. I mean, so my major takeaway though was, I mean, obviously it's really hard to recommand on an MLB debut. I'll say this over and over again. Like it's really, really hard to. I was hoping to see more out of the heater to change my mind on my previous assessment of him. And I didn't really. What I'm upset about with Winker is I think he just walked the first batter of the game. Correct me if I'm wrong, Waldrep. But it was a scenario where like you should be taking right now. And it was even like a 2-0 count or something. And Winker swings into the fastball inside. That is just like an easy pop out. And I'm thinking like it's inside, like off the play. I'm like, what are you doing, Winker? You're just saving this rookie who's like struggling so much in his MLB debut, and you swing in a fastball out of the zone and like you just gave him an out of nowhere. I was like, oh my God.
He walked. Actually, it was interesting. The first batter of the game, Abrams grounded out on the first pitch.
Oh, right.
Through.
Right.
And then he threw a strike to Lane Thomas and then four straight balls.
Balls. Which right. And then Winker it was, and what was it, the Winker? The
first pitch.
And Winker felt a pop of the first pitch, right? And it was a fastball out of the zone inside. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what are you doing? You just four straight pitches to the guy. He's like, it's the MLB name. You don't do this. And like, you give him such a gift. Like, you don't do that, Winker. Drove me up the wall. That's right. Abrams did do that. It's so funny too, is that the first inning of MLB debuts are so stressful. Like, so stressful. I think there's another one I was just watching. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Mazur. Maybe it was, I think someone else over the weekend. I'm just probably forgetting about right now. But the first batter of the game, it got to your typical like 3-0, and there's a fastball right down the pipe, and the guy just like let it go. I'm like, oh, come on, man. That's like right there for you to hit. And the next one was a 3-1, which is what you normally see, which is always going to be a fastball. It's just like, you don't want to walk your first batter in the majors. And the batter was like, okay, fine, this time I'm going to be looking for this. And yeah, he had a double off of it. It's like, yes, that is what you see so often. It's like a 3-1 extra base hit to their first batter in the majors, right? So it that first thing is always so interesting to me on MLB debuts.
Yeah. Anyway, I haven't given up, but I don't think you're getting like some ace level guy here. Anybody else you feel like talking about? I mean Drew Thorpe, we'll see tomorrow.
I'm going to do all these really quickly because these are the more interesting ones, I think. JP Sears goes up 20 spots. Oh my God, 20 spots. It's the 77, 97 to 70. Okay, let's hold your horses. Although only reason he's here is because he just pitched, I don't know, the best commanded game I've ever seen from him, of actually having pitch separation where you should see it for those pitches. Four seamers upstairs, actually Singer's also upstairs, I think. You have changeups down in glove side, and then you have sweepers down in arm side. And what? JP Sears, you're not supposed to be able to do that. And he did it, and it was great, and that's pretty dang cool. Then you have Spencer Arrighetti with two really good matchups this week. Hopefully that he gets enough strikes with both his four-seamer at the top of the zone and then everything else also. Drew Thorpe is making his MLB debut. What's up, Drew Thorpe? Remember this guy, the guy for the Soto trade, and then he went over to the White Sox in the Cease trade. Same offseason. He's a changeup guy. And I generally don't like changeup guys. I think that you need something else in a changeup in the majors. Especially if you're a prospect where you can get away with it in the minors more so than you can in the majors. Also, last time we saw him was 89-90 in the spring, and I don't have any data on him because it was only double A and I was getting promoted. So I hope it's 93 and change or something like that. He's against the White Sox. He's for the White Sox in a good matchup. I think it's Mariners, that's it. Maybe that works. You can spec at him if you want. I'm curious too, but I don't really think there's a lot to love about Thorpe. I don't know. Tyler McGill hasn't really executed the command that we want to see, and it's so annoying, but he gets the Marlins, so what the heck, why not, right? Ben Brown, is he going to be replaced by Jordan Wicks? I don't know. Ben Brown did introduce a changeup. That's kind of like the same thing we're talking about with who's the other guy before you just kind of show me? Jared Jones. Same thing that Ben Brown did, because he's fastball. Curveball thing is, I don't really like Ben Brown's fastball that much. Curveballs can be very good, but I don't know. You're going to get like five innings constantly. It's like four and change often. It's that 1-7 guy was no hit stuff. I don't know. And then Hogan Harris. Oh my gosh, Hogan Harris. The IVB on the four seamer still there, and he has a good curveball still, and he has a good changeup still. And it's like, he's actually kind of good. It's weird. So maybe that does work out.
I wrote about JP Sears in the same Mixing It Up article where I talked about Hunter Brown, because he added in a sinker this year as well and has started throwing the sinker as the primary fastball to lefties. Also has trouble commanding the sinker.
But didn't last start.
Right. And that's the thing where like,
was good.
You kind of never know when these new pitches are going to click in. What I found interesting is, you know, we talked at the beginning of the year about JP Sears, where like he has a surprisingly good four seam in terms of like, where how he uses it, the steepness of it. When he gets it up in the zone, he can really get swings and misses. It doesn't have really good velocity. He does give up a lot of home runs on it because when he misses his spot, it's not an overpowering pitch. And I have found it interesting. This article I obviously published before the last start, but the idea was he was giving up less hard contact because the sinker was inducing less hard contact than the four-seam fastball, but he was missing fewer bats because he kind of needed the four-seam fastball
to miss bats. Otherwise, yeah, it was just putting a lot of weight on the sweeper as being the only swing and miss pitch. So it was like, okay, is this version of JP Sears a guy who will be, you know, who won't allow a lot of hard contact and will be give you solid ratios on a team that isn't good, but he's also not going to have any strikeout upside. And so I was pretty conflicted about like him reducing the usage of that four-seam fastball rather than trying to just optimize the usage of it. But there's still something about him that I can't quit. Like there are pieces with JP Sears that I find intriguing. I think there's something in there.
I think so too. Again, I think it really does come down to command and consistency with this stuff, but it feels like it's coming together a little bit. So I hope it does. For JP Sears. Just a little bit.
We'll end with the streamer tier. Number 84 is Jordan Montgomery. Number 85, Keaton Wynn. Number 86, Griffin Canning. Number 87, Mitch Spence. Number 88, Braxton Garrett. Number 89, Simeon Woods Richardson. Number 90, Luis Severino. Number 91, Zach Littell. Number 92, Chris Paddock. Number 93, Joey Estes. Number 94, Bailey Falter. Number 95, David Peterson. Number 96, Charlie Morton. Number 97, Jameson Taillon. Number 98, Cal Quantrill. Number 99, Sean Manaea. And number 100, DJ Hertz. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Congratulations, Eric.
I did it. Listen,
we had
one bad week in there, but we're okay.
10 for 10. I was 9 for 10. So 10 for 10. This is called the bathroom stall, because sometimes when you're working, you just need a little vacation. And it's just a moment. It's just for a second. You're just sitting down, looking at your phone. You're not doing anything else.
And if it's full, like floor to ceiling doors, then you feel like you're really in like your own little space.
You know, you can also even consider it's like the car for a moment. Sit in the car. That's it, because this is just a one-week streamer, guys. Nothing more.
Any of these guys stand out to you as being of more of interest than others? Obviously, I understand the rankings dictate that, but just like names you feel like you want to touch on a little bit?
Sure. I mean, there's Keaton Wynn, who did come back and had a bad game, still ill and stuff, but he did 10 whiffs on the splitter, which is really good to see. Mitch Spence is one of the higher PLV-rated guys because he throws cutters and sliders for strikes. And
Nothing straight. Everything he throws moves.
Right. It's also low, though, in the 90s, like low 90s, upper 80s or so. So it's like Rasmussen without the velocity. And that's why you get one like 7 innings with 3 Ks. It's like, that's classic Rasmussen. There's also DJ Hers at 100. Who is this guy? I joked in the preseason that he was the number 2 starter in the Nationals. But then Mitchell Parker and Cole Irvin, Jake Irvin needed to show up. DJ Hers, his command isn't quite there yet. He does get the Marlins, I believe. And maybe that does work, where, you know, his fastball is solid and he does have some decent secondaries in there too. Otherwise, not really much that's that interesting. I don't know. I mean, Jordan Montgomery's down here because he's just been so bad, but it's the Angels. So what the heck? And Chris Paddock has 2 nice starts in a row against the Rocky Road. And he has actually tonight Rocky Road. And then I believe another just really good matchup later this week. So hopefully he does well.
I am like intrigued by DJ Hers just because I'm always intrigued by guys who can miss bats. And he was really good for the Nationals after coming over in the Jaime Candelario trade last year. He looked good in the AFL. But, you know, as you mentioned, the command has some serious reliever risk to it.
Yes.
But I think they're going to give him a shot this year because why not, right? Like, you're not really contending. This is a chance to see, like, can he start or not? And so I'm keeping my eye on him as like as an intriguing streamer when he gets matchups I like. Where like I don't know that I trust him enough to like pick him up and keep him even in like a 15 team league, but I could see being like, okay, if he gets the bottom half of the league, right? Actually, there's only like 4 teams that are playing like really, really well right now. So maybe just like if he avoids like the best 6-7 lineups in baseball, then I'm happy to start him.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, maybe that does work. Again, it's just about command with him. As long as he throws enough strikes, Hers should be fine.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us this week. As I mentioned, I do have my Mixing It Up article coming out on Wednesday over at NBC Sports, so make sure you check that out. I'll be looking at the rookie pitchers, including Mitch Spence, who is a rookie, And I wanted to work him in there because I saw his start on Sunday. And so I just wanted to talk about it. Make sure you check out all the cool things on PitcherList. I saw Kyle, as I mentioned, tweet out the minor league, apps, the pitch plots. Those look super cool. Something to dig into. As always, if you want to rate and review this podcast, it's super helpful for us to get it out there to other people to listen to. Nick, anything else pressing this week that you need the people to know about?
I mean, guys, yeah, just sign up for PL Pro and you can get access to those minor league cards. Also, we're going to be putting out stuff for hitters too, because it's going to be really helpful for you to see the skills of these hitters as opposed to just their plate discipline from K minus walk rate or just their home run totals. So we have really good data on that. And look forward to that stuff. It's all via PL Pro. So go sign up today.
And if you don't have PL Pro yet, the rolling graphs that are on there for hitters are also really great.
Of course,
like decision value, in zone, out of zone, all that kind of stuff is like it. Listen, I love the StatCast stuff, the StatCast rolling windows. I think
it's
these
only
are just as
good, if not it's the only way I do hitter analysis is actually with our PL Pro apps.
They're
it's
great.
Like, it's the only thing you need.
Yes, they're phenomenal. And you can follow both Nick and I on Twitter and check us out here on another episode of On the Corner next week. I'm Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
I'm going to go plan another vacation.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Keep your space feeling comfortable this summer with help from Menards. The Denali Air 6000 BTU window air conditioner has a 3-speed cooling system with remote control, allowing you to control the temperature of your space from anywhere in the room. You call the shots with auto and eco mode to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Stop by in-store or online at Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.